I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. We're talking jazz today. Later in the hour, Bart Wiseman joins us to discuss this year's Provincetown Jazz Festival. But first, we take a look back at the legacy of jazz on the Cape. And joining us is John Basile. His new book is Cape Cod Jazz, From Colombo to the Columns. Welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So jazz is not really the first thing I think people associate with Cape Cod, but those in the arts, including musicians, have long been attracted to this region, including jazz musicians. Yeah. So, John, do we know when jazz became a fixture on the Cape and what originally brought the music here?
I think what brought it here was the same thing that brought it to the rest of the country, the radio. People could hear the Boston stations, the New York stations, and they were intrigued by this new music. So as soon as there was radio, I think there was jazz on the Cape. It's hard to say who picked up the first trumpet or clarinet or trombone and played the first jazz notes on the Cape, but it goes back to the earliest days of the music.
All right, let's talk about some of the notable musicians. Yeah. Marie Marcus has been called the first lady of jazz on Cape Cod, and she not only sang but played the piano and studied with Fats Waller.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about her.
Marie Marcus came up from Boston, born in Roxbury, and was a child prodigy on the piano, played on a local radio show, Big Brother Bob Emery's program. And when he went to New York, she went with him to be part of his show there. And through connections that are almost impossible to explain all these years later, she ended up playing at a certain nightclub where Fats Waller heard her, and they struck up a friendship, and he would give her, I wouldn't call it lessons, it was more informal jam sessions, and she learned so much. Can you imagine a little, very young girl, a teenager, barely out of her teens at the time, studying with one of the great jazz pianists, Fats Waller?
Yeah. And he was amazing, too.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what originally brought her to the Cape? I mean, did she find it difficult making that change from New York to what was really rural Cape Cod?
She did. She was offered a gig at the Coonamesset in Falmouth and had never been to the Cape. And there's a quote in the book. I don't have it in front of me, but she talked about getting off the train on this, you know, cold and dark night, and looking around saying, what am I doing here? But of course, she never left. That became her home base for the rest of her life, a long life. And she performed into her 80s
Wow.
on the Cape.
What were some of the other regular venues that she played?
Oh, all up and down. Mildred's in Hyannis. She played there. She played the Panama, the Club Panama in Hyannis with another pianist. And they had a two-piano act. And the young John Kennedy would come in and listen to them play when before he was president. Mm-hmm. And she played virtually anywhere there was jazz on the Cape. Marie played at one time or another. And in fact, she was one of the people who was always promoting jazz and trying to get more gigs for the jazz musicians. She was great in that way.
All right, let's give a listen to Marie Marcus. This track is titled Back Home in Indiana. Marcus on piano, Ron Ormsby bass, Jack Sager drums, and Lou Colombo on trumpet with Dick Johnson on clarinet. Now, Lou Colombo, that's another important part of Cape Cod's jazz legacy. What was it about Colombo's playing that attracted fans, including the great trumpet player Dizzy Gillespie?
When Dizzy Gillespie says, you're his favorite trumpet player.
That's something.
That is something. And that quote's been around for years, and it's true. Dizzy said that. And Lou had a way of just appealing to any audience at any time, anywhere. He could read a room. He knew how to appeal to an audience. And being a master trumpet player didn't hurt either. Right. So, yeah. You know, he had the personality and the ability.
Yeah, I remember when he died. He was 84, car accident in Florida. Yeah. But he played, again, another one who played a lot, right up to his death. I think he played that weekend, didn't he, that he died?
He was leaving a gig
and
was in a car accident. So he played literally to the night he died.
Yeah. Describe the funeral held for him here on the Cape.
It was a New Orleans-style parade down Main Street in Hyannis to the Cape Cod Melody Tent, where they threw a jam session in his honor on Father's Day.
Yeah. He also had an unorthodox way of holding the trumpet. Describe it.
As anybody who's ever studied the trumpet knows, you're supposed to center it on your lips and hold it with your left hand and play the vowels with your right. He would play it off to one side and hold it in one hand. It would drive trumpet players crazy, but you listen to the music.
If it works, right?
It works. Don't mess with success.
All right, we have another cut. This is Time After Time with Lou Colombo on trumpet. Anything you want to say before we listen to it?
It's typical Lou. It's beautiful.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm lucky to be loving you. I'm lucky to be the one you run to see in the evening when the day is new. I only know what I know. The passing years may show you kept my love so young, so new. And time after time, tell myself that I'm lucky to be loving you.
Lou Colombo on trumpet, and that was Time After Time, Bobby Travis on vocals, Fred Freed on guitar, Rod McCauley on bass, and Ron Lundberg on drums. Now, as you mentioned earlier, the jazz scene on the Cape started with entertaining tourists, and it goes back as far as 1920 at Bornhurst on the canal. And your book includes photographs of the building and the ballroom. A lot of great photographs in the book. So tell us more about that venue and its part in Cape Cod's jazz legacy.
You know, I put out the word through people I know. I'm researching a book on jazz on the Cape Cod. Tell me what you know. And that's one of the answers that came back. You've got to look into Bornhurst. I had never heard of it. I went and spoke to the Born Historical Society people. They had photos. They were so helpful. And through them, I started digging up newspaper articles. It turns out it was one of the biggest stops on the circuit that the big bands would play. And it was right on the canal. It's gone, long gone now. But it was right on the canal. It was a great place for the to hear music and have something to eat and go for a stroll along the canal. You could just picture it on a summer evening with the music playing. And I found that all the name bands played there. Duke Ellington played there regularly, a number of times. And this is early Duke Ellington. This is the 1920s. But I found records showing that every swing through New England, Bornhurst was always on the itinerary. Yeah, it was a great place for bands like that.
The title of your book includes a reference to the columns. Yeah. So tell us more about this historic venue.
That was much later, but that building still stands. It's been vacant for years on Route 28 in West Dennis. Beautiful building with the big columns in front. It was a sea captain's house. And in the 70s, Warren Maddows ran it. And he would always have people like Dave McKenna playing solo piano. One summer, he brought in the great Teddy Wilson. And so you'd have a set by Dave McKenna, a set by Teddy Wilson, and then they would play together in the final set of the evening. Mm-hmm. And the columns became – it changed hands later. Some musicians bought it, Ron Ormsby, and was one of the owners, also a working musician. So that was a little unusual too. Mm-hmm. And ran it into the 80s, and when the scene started to change and people weren't going to that sort of thing, it closed. And that was really its best use, I think, when it was a jazz club. And I had a little experience as a young kid before I even lived on the Cape. I was just here visiting for a weekend. I was a trumpet student at the time, and I'm driving along, and I see tonight at the Columns, Clark Terry, who's one of the great jazz trumpet players of all time. I could not believe he was playing in this little out-of-the-way place on Cape Cod. So I pull in, and I met Clark that night. And in fact, I was studying trumpet with a friend of his, Lenny Johnson, in Boston. Wow. And when I ever told him that, we were friends.
That's it. Yeah, fast pals.
That's great.
Well, you mentioned Dave McKenna, a pianist, and he was very talented. But those who knew him said his fame never matched his talent. So tell us more about Dave and his music.
He was so shy and retiring and would never boast about his playing. There's a story that I'm so glad I found Hank O'Neill, who was a record producer, produced a lot of Dave's albums. And he told me a great story. He said, he would ask Dave, oh, you got to record for my label. You've got to. And Dave would always say, I don't know any tunes. I don't know what I'd record. And, of course, the joke is Dave knew every tune, and he had an encyclopedic mind. And so Hank said, well, I want you to know I've left five $100 bills on the piano in our recording studio, and if you'll come down and record an album, they're yours.
There you are.
And
that
did it.
All right, so we're
going to
hear something from Dave McKenna. What is it?
This is I Wished on the Moon, Dave McKenna, solo piano.
Musician that you can sort of feel the passion, you know what I mean? When they're playing, it's almost like it's something's coming from their soul. It's just so beautiful.
I never heard Dave play at less than that level.
Oh,
he always
amazing.
Played at that intensity, and we were so lucky to have him here on the Cape. This was a home game for him. You know, when I was involved with the Cape Cod Jazz Society in the 80s and 90s, we would put on concerts, and Dave would often be the featured performer. And it was great. How many people can reach into their backyard and pull out a Dave McKenna to come down and play?
Storyville is another one. And I love this. You have a menu from Storyville that it's very interesting because you have the dishes and then musicians' quotes, jazz musicians' quotes next to the two broiled kidney lamb chops for $4.50.
That's 1958, I guess. So you could do that.
Yeah, but that was kind of an interesting.
Storyville was another place in the woods in Harwich. George Ween, who was now we know as the founder of the Newport Jazz Festival, Newport Folk Festival, he ran Storyville in Boston, and it would close in the summer. And he was looking for something to do in the summertime. He connected with his old friend Paul Nossiter, and they ran Storyville in Harwich for, I think it was four summers in the late 50s, right up to 1960, and then it closed, economics again.
Right.
But they had every name jazz artist come through that place.
Duke Ellington, I believe, right?
Ellington. Yeah, we've got some nice pictures in the book of Ellington when he was at Storyville, and also Johnny Hodges, who was his great saxophonist. On the beach in Harwich.
That's
and
great.
Those
yeah.
are from the Jack Bradley collection. I can't neglect that.
All right. So if you were in Provincetown during the 50s and 60s, the Atlantic House was the place to hear jazz. Tell us about that place.
I got lucky on that one. I had known there was jazz at the Atlantic House, but I'm doing my research online, looking around, and I came across some photographs taken by John Reynolds, who is a very well-known writer now in Canada. But as a youngster of a college kid. He just came for vacation to Provincetown with some buddies, I guess, and they went to hear the jazz. He happened to take some pictures of Jerry Mulligan and Stan Getz on the bandstand at the Atlantic House. And a big billboard outside advertising who was there. And he was kind enough to let me use the pictures in the book, so they're in there. And by researching that, I started with that. I found out all these tremendous people played at the Atlantic House back in that day. Reggie Cabral owned it then, and including Billie Holiday. And it may have been one of her last appearances anywhere. I haven't been able to confirm that, but people of that stature were at the Atlantic House all the time.
I think I've heard that story of Billie Holiday playing in Provincetown.
Yeah. I found some newspaper accounts and some reminiscences of people who were there then. So I can't imagine talent like that around.
I know, right? Let's talk about another Cape jazz musician, Lee Childs. He was known as a traditional jazz player. How do you define traditional jazz, and do you know what influenced his musical style?
Well, Dixieland, that whole traditional New Orleans style, you might call it, Dixieland. But Lee could play in any style. I heard him play as modern as you can imagine, but he preferred to play in that more traditional style. And he was so good. He died very young, and about 5 or 6 years ago. And he was one of those guys, you could put him in any context. He could just swing anywhere.
Let's give a listen to the Lee Childs Quartet. This is Birdland Jump. Childs on sax and clarinet, Ed LaFever on piano, Rod McCauley on bass, and Gary Johnson on drums. Local radio stations in the 1970s and 80s were another popular way to listen to jazz musicians. You mentioned radio, and you write, Dick Golden almost single-handedly brought jazz to Cape Cod, starting in 1977 when he premiered his program originally called PM Cape Cod on WQRC. You could not do this book without Dick Golden.
Dick's a good friend, and as soon as I called him and asked him to write the introduction, absolutely. How long do you need it? When do you need it? And it was just done. Yeah. And he's such he has this encyclopedic knowledge of the music.
Yeah, a great guy. And he really, this was his passion and he brought it to the airwaves. And so tell us a little bit more about his influence on the jazz scene.
Well, he would make it a point to interview any of the jazz stars who were coming to, say, the Melody Tent or any place on the Cape. He would get them in studio and sit them down and give them a good long interview. And nobody was doing that in local radio then.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the major cities, but certainly not in a smaller market like the Cape. And Dick, because he has this encyclopedic knowledge of the music, he could play a song by Dave McKenna and play another version of it by Duke Ellington and another version of it by somebody else and go right down the line and draw these connections. Mm-hmm. And he loves the singers. So he would bring in Tony Bennett and Sinatra and all the great singers who really appreciated the jazz idiom and maybe weren't jazz singers as such, but could really, really handle those songs, the Great American Songbook, as we call it.
Right. And you would think, why would big names like that want to come into a little Cape Cod radio station? But when you have an interviewer like that who really knows and shares the passion, that's a fun interview.
Oh, yeah. And he had people like Count Basie and Bobby Hackett, and he would just talk to these people on their level because he understood what they were doing.
Yeah. We have a cut to go out on. It's a Goodbye by Jack Boomer, solo piano. What can you tell us about this piece?
Jack was a guy who had all the talent in the world, and he was very popular on the Cape in the 70s and 80s, and just a beautiful player.
The book is Cape Cod Jazz, From Colombo to Columns. We'll have more information about the book at our website, capeandislands.org. Author John Basile, thanks so much for coming in and doing the book. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Coming up after break, we continue our discussion of jazz with Bart Wiseman, founder of the Provincetown Jazz Festival. And here we have Goodbye by Jack Boomer. You're listening to The Point. We're talking jazz this hour, and joining us is Bart Wiseman, founder of the Provincetown Jazz Festival. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mindy. Good to be here.
It's that time of year again. The festival is Thursday, August 10th in Provincetown, and Monday, August 14th in Kituat at the Kituat Center for the Arts. You have two artists making their debut at the festival, Molly Ringwald and Takumi Kakamoto. Did I say that right?
You did.
All right. And let's start with Molly Ringwald. And yes, this is the Molly Ringwald of The Breakfast Club and the Pretty in Pink films. And who knew? She's also a jazz vocalist and was singing before she started acting. So tell us about her jazz background.
That's right. Her father is a jazz pianist, and she started singing very early on and obviously went on to do her acting career, but always wanted to continue singing. And she cut an album a couple years ago, which I heard, which I was very excited about. And her agent knew about the jazz festival, had been to the jazz festival, and she had never been to Cape Cod. So we picked the time and made it happen, and very excited to have her make her debut.
So you didn't know that she was a jazz singer either until you heard the...
That's right. I had no idea. Yeah. And we're not trying to take actresses who sing. We're always looking for, you know, jazz talent, because that's what we're about. Right. So when I found that she had done the CD and worked with professional musicians and was starting to work in New York and looking at a trip to China, I said, well, this would be great.
And she just happened to have this other career.
Yeah, exactly. And she's an author, too. Yeah. So
So what did you feel were some of her strengths as a vocalist?
Well, I always loved jazz standards. And, you know, the fact that she had done these jazz standards and worked with these high-level musicians on the West Coast. I mean, Clayton Cameron on drums, he's one of my favorite drummers. He used to play with Tony Bennett. So, you know, great caliber musicians, wonderful charts, and she has a terrific singing voice. So
we have a cut of Molly Ringwald. This is titled Pick Yourself Up.
Nothing's impossible, I have found, for when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip, be grateful for the pleasant trip, and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? So pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting that.
No, and we're very pleased to be bringing Alex Smith, who will be playing piano for her, from New York City. When Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga went on tour, Tony had his own band and Lady Gaga had her own band, and Alex was her pianist.
Wow.
So we're very excited about that.
Exciting.
And he is no stranger to the Cape and Provincetown, so we're glad to bring him back. But he's making his debut too.
All right. So, and Takumi Kakamoto was born in Japan and is a junior at Berklee College of Music,
yes,
studying piano and jazz composition. So tell us more about Takumi and what struck you about his playing.
Well, a couple years back, we did some Berklee Rising Stars, and I went back to Berklee and some of the professors I know, and I said that I would like to have if possible, get an Asian artist, because we've gotten people from New Zealand, Australia, South America, Europe, and Canada. So I was like, let's reach out to Asia. So Tim Ray came back, who's one of my favorite pianists in the world, and said, I have a student, Takumi. And I said, well, I just need just an opener for Molly. He won't play with her. And he says, oh, that'll be perfect. And we're very excited. He's very excited, as you can imagine. So we're very happy to have him.
And you'll be accompanying both Molly and Takumi on the drums for their performances in Provincetown.
So and Ron Ormsby on bass.
Yeah. So describe the challenges and fun of playing with new musicians and vocalists, because everybody sort of has their own style.
Well, I'm one of those drummers who loves backing vocalists. There's some drummers who don't, and I'm one who does. And you know, when I worked with Keeter Betts, who was the bass player for 24 years for Ella Fitzgerald, he would always describe that his vision was, what can we do for that singer? What evening dress can we put on her? Or what pearls or accoutrements? What can we do to make that singer sound the best they can? And that's always the way I approach it. We luckily will have a rehearsal. We don't always have the luxury, but we will have a rehearsal with Alex and Ron and myself beforehand with Molly the day before, which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody like that, you want to make sure that you've got your charts down and everybody has all the timing down. So it's a fantastic show.
Sounds like fun. So then the festival moves on to the Kituat Center for the Arts. And
for
up
the
next,
seventh year.
Yeah. Has it been 7 years?
Yes.
Already? Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
And
our MC will be?
Brian Morris.
No, we're having Steve Junker.
You're having Steve Junker?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yes.
They're both very musically talented. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, okay.
I did.
So either one of them are great.
Yeah, Brian has done it before, too.
Yes,
yes.
Right.
As well as Mindy Todd.
Yes. Yes. And we have Matt DeChamplin also making his debut at the festival. And before we talk about him, let's hear a cut and see if listeners can guess this familiar tune. Fingers flying.
Yeah,
oh my
can.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Beautiful piano playing with it. Sort of had that old time feel to it. And if you hadn't guessed, it was T for Two performed by Matt DeChamplin.
And Matt's the jazz piano teacher at the Hart School of Music. He and Atla DeChamplin were referred to me by Sean Montero. And I always have two guest artists at the Grand Cru and Hyannis Monthly. And they came and they did such a good job. I offered them the position to open. And this is a great story because they didn't know that I had hired Ken Poplowski that they were going to open for and that Matt would be playing for. And Atla had a CD of Matt's on her table when I contacted her, ready to send to Ken Poplowski, thinking that Matt should play with Ken at some point. And here it happens.
It just happens. And what is it that you like about Matt's playing? It's different. It has kind of that Fats Waller kind of a feel to it, doesn't it?
That particular thing he does, but he can play contemporary too.
Oh, he does
too.
So
he's he's very versatile. And when he backs Atla, they just work so well together as a team, as a husband and wife. And I've worked with him as a sideman too, so I knew his versatility. So I was going to keep him on the piano to back Ken, and that's always fun when you can keep somebody on and then bring them on to the next artist.
Yeah, it's always fun to see them kind of all play together.
Yes.
All right, so you mentioned that Matt's wife, vocalist Atla de Champlin, is going to join them. And let's tell us a little bit more about her before we hear her track.
Right. So Atla right now lives in Connecticut. She teaches at the Western Connecticut State University. She's a voice instructor. And obviously they perform all the time as a duo. And they just work so well together. She's a terrific voice. When Shawn Montero takes off in the Hart School of Music, she subs for her. So it's quite a recommendation right there.
All right, so we're going to hear I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. Love's the one thing that I've plenty of, baby. Drink him a while, ski him a while. You're sure to you always pine for. Gee, it's nice to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets for worth doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, that I can't give you anything but love. Baby dee ba doo ba doo ba doo ba ba doo ba we out. Bo ba da we out. We out. Ba ba doo ba doo we out. Ba da ba doo ba out. Ba ba doo ba doo ba we out.
As you mentioned, in addition to being performers, both Matt and Atla teach at the university level. And as someone yourself who also teaches music education, does teaching influence your music or performance? What impact does that have?
Well, it's interesting because it makes you evaluate your basics. You know, you just go back to your basics, and as you get older in jazz, the better you play. Actually, the less you play, and the more life experience. So as you're teaching these kids and getting more life experience and bringing that into the music and showing them different ways, they teach you too.
Mm. I was going to say that.
They teach
no matter what you're teaching,
you learn so much from them. When you're with somebody like Atla, who's a terrific scat singer, she's going to learn a lot from her students. Mm-hmm. And when you're with somebody like Matt, who's teaching all these wonderful pianists, he's going to learn a lot from his students because they're going to do something. Even the most basic performer is going to do something that's going to make you say, wow, where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, it happened to me today. I was like, one of the kids was doing something. I said, do that again. You know, that was really cool.
Yeah, very inspiring.
Very inspiring.
And I'm always blown away. You know, we do that music memory thing. Sometimes
yes.
I get asked to be a judge. And this last time, you had some really young kids in the little jazz band that, was it a trio, if I remember?
Quartet.
And they just blow you away. It's amazing. amazing.
Great kids.
Yeah.
You know, 14, 16, and they can play. And they start understanding and knowing the history of jazz and appreciating jazz, too. So that's...
And it's not something I think you expect younger kids to be interested in jazz. You know, they always want rock and roll or rap or, you know. So are you finding that more kids are interested in learning jazz than...
Well, hopefully we'll talk a little bit about the Jazz in the Schools program we're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's helping, you know, put it on their playlist, which would be great.
All right. Yeah. We're talking about the Provincetown Jazz Festival. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the Provincetown Jazz Festival with Bart Wiseman, founder of the Jazz Festival, which performs not only in Provincetown, but also at the Catuit Center for the Arts. All right, Ken Poplawski has been called the greatest living jazz clarinetist, and he performed or recorded with a number of well-known artists, including Rosemary Clooney, Mel Torme, and Benny Goodman, among others. So what makes him such an exceptional clarinetist, in your opinion?
Well, I'll tell you the story he told me. He was with the Benny Goodman Band, and Benny Goodman died. And this is 2 days before they were supposed to perform at the Melody Tent. And he went on, he led the band, and this was back in the 80s. And since then, he has just been on the scene as an incredible performer. He works with so many different people and is so versatile and just brings an excitement to the band stage. He also plays sax, too, but... You know, I've always loved clarinet, whether it's in jazz or classical music. Mm-hmm. It's been a favorite instrument of mine. We had Evan Christopher from New Orleans last year, and so we're happy to bring him up from New York. And it's been overdue. Ken hasn't been here for many, many years, and we're happy to bring him back and make his debut at the Jazz Festival.
All right, so we're going to have a cut of Ken Poplawski's titled The Flaming Sword. Do you want to tell us anything about this before we hear
it? I think it speaks for itself.
Speaks for itself, okay.
Samba doesn't brighten your day.
I was going to say, whet your appetite a little bit.
And you can just picture the pianist being Matt de Champlain, you know.
Yeah, that's
playing. That's, yeah.
Ken Poplawski with Matt and Alta de Champlain will be performing in Catuit at the Catuit Center for the Arts. We'll have more information about the lineup for the Provincetown Jazz Festival at our website, capeandislands.org. And again, that's August 10th in Provincetown, August 14th in Catuit. Now, we can't let you go without talking about this very active music education thing that we've got going on here in the Cape through your Jazz in the Schools program. So you bring jazz education to students across Cape Cod at no cost to the schools.
That's correct.
Right?
The Provincetown Jazz Festival pays. What happens is we donate money to the Cape Conservatory, who's also a nonprofit, and they administer this. They reach out to the schools. We've performed in every town on Cape Cod. Our goal is to hit every elementary school. We're about eight shy. And then once we finish, we'll start again.
Mm. So tell us more about the program and what you hear from the schools and the kids.
Well, first of all, you know, you walk into a group of kids anywhere from kindergarten to 5 or 6 years old. We do middle school sometimes, too. And we start with something that's kind of funky in jazz. And they come in and they go, wait a minute, this is jazz? And we go, yeah. Then we take them through the entire history. They help us decide. We take a piece like Summertime. We play it 4 different ways. They decide which way we're going to play it. Mm. They participate. They learn about jazz. And, you know, this isn't just for musicians. This is for everybody in the entire school. So we just hope that they keep it on their playlist and they push their parents.
So they don't have to be taking any kind of musical instrument. This is more like an appreciation thing?
Or? Well, at the Cape Conservatory, we have art and we have dance and we have music. So we have all kinds of things. So there's ample opportunity for people to participate. Plus, there's preschool, too. Mm-hmm. So there's, it's, you know, multiple things they can do. So we're not just pushing the music. But in this case, our goal is to educate the young kids on jazz and teach them for appreciation for jazz, America's art form.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the jazz scene is growing? I mean, we've talked about this before, but
yes.
It seems like it has been growing, you know, not just here, I mean, everywhere.
Yes, I think that we're seeing a resurgence. I know it's our number one export to the world because you can go anywhere in the world and hear jazz and play jazz. I think what's happened now is the other parts of the world are starting to influence us, and we're starting to appreciate it more and more in the United States, and that's the key. And my goal is, you know, Cape Cod jazz, whether it be playing professionally or teaching the kids. But the thing that's closest to my heart is taking the jazz into the schools and having these kids just walk out smiling and being exposed to live jazz for the first time is amazing for them.
Yeah. I would also think part of the appeal from the younger kids' perspective would be the improv opportunities.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's like, and not that there's anything wrong with being classically trained
right.
or going for the rock and roll.
Right.
But they can really be creative,
yes.
can't they?
We're doing the, when we're talking right now, we're in the middle of this 4-week summer sound session to the conservatory where we do jazz and rock with the kids 10 to 18. And watching, you know, a 10-year-old improvise for the first time when they walk in and say, I can't improvise. And all of a sudden now they're improvising. And giving them, some cheats, some little ways to get in there. And then they, you know, if it sparks, they go on from there and learn some jazz theory and go off and hopefully blossom.
That's always one of the things I've been impressed with, like people who can, you know, just all of a sudden go off and improv. And then I'm always wondering, well, how's the rest of the group, you know, whether it's, you know, a trio, quintet, whatever, how are you following that? I mean, do you just sort of let it go? I mean, how do you know where to go?
Basically, you think of it as you're going down the water on a raft, and the rhythm section's the raft, and the person standing there on top or sitting there on top just has a comfortable place to enjoy the view, and we give them security all the time. Mm-hmm. So we know that whatever they're going to do, we're going to be with them, and that's just the part of the beauty. And of course, you know, playing with different people all the time.
Keeps you sharp.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we should mention, we're talking about some summer things here, but you have jazz things going on all year round.
Well, year round. The fundraiser we have coming up, we can talk about, but at the Grand Cru, Cape Cod Resort, we're there 4 times a month. 2 regular groups I have there, and then we have 2 guest artists a month there. At the Cultural Center of Cape Cod, I do concerts year round there, Kituit Center for the Arts. And then I have this wonderful series in the summer with the Provincetown Art Association Museum. And we're getting ready to start on July 26th. We'll have Rebecca Paris there. Mm-hmm. And then we go on and end that with August 30th with Donna Byrne, who just opened for Tony Bennett.
Yeah. So are there still the opportunities for the jam sessions? Do you still do
yes,
that where
so
everybody can kind of come in? And,
yeah, it's almost 11 years now.
Wow.
It's at Riverway up in South Yarmouth. And it's the third Sunday of every month at 4 o'clock. You have to make a reservation. But last Sunday we had 25 musicians, 130 patrons, and a book signing, John Basile's new book.
Wow.
We had a book signing for that, and I was bowled over. There's a chapter on
me. I didn't realize you did that all year.
Yes.
At the jam session.
Oh, all year round.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So you never know who's going to show
yes.
up.
Yeah. And Riverway has given us the venue for our fundraiser on July 31st.
All right. So we're going to talk about this fundraiser is to support jazz in the schools, and you're bringing back 2 favorites for performance vocalists, Dane Van Adder and pianist Fabiana DeCastro. Tell us more about this. And these 2 together are just
Yeah,
awesome.
So this is the first time they've actually performed in concert. They've done some stuff at the Grand Cru, but Dane Van Adder is one of the best jazz, male jazz vocalists in the country. He just moved from Pittsburgh to Cleveland, and it's an honor to bring him back. And I was on his last CD. I helped produce it and play on it. And just wonderful jazz vocalist. He also does cabaret. And Fabiano is a composer. He's from São Paulo. He comes up every year for a couple weeks. So we tried to coordinate so they could perform together.
What a great combination.
Yeah.
Though.
So Ron Ormsby, who goes down to Brazil and performs with Fabiano and myself on drums, and we'll do some great numbers. And we have one of my students who's actually an intern this year at Summer Sounds, Abby Pollack, who's from the Cape, and she'll be making a guest appearance on sax.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's
very
cool.
Excited
she's
about
I bet
that.
She's excited.
And 100% of the proceeds go to Jazz in the Schools. So we'll take that money and we'll use it to go out to the Jazz in the Schools program.
All right. Jazz in the Schools fundraiser is July 31st in South Yarmouth. We'll have a link with more information at capeandislands.org. Bart Wiseman, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to go out with Dane Van Adder with But Beautiful. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Love is funny, or it's sad, or it's quiet, or it's mad. It's a good thing, or it's bad, but beautiful. Beautiful to take a chance, and if you fall, you fall. And I'm thinking I wouldn't mind at all. Love is tearful, or it's gay. It's a problem, or it's play. It's a heartache either way, but beautiful. And I'm thinking if you were mine, I'd never let you go. That would be but beautiful, I know. Take a chance, and if you fall, you fall. And I'm thinking I wouldn't mind at all. Love is tearful, or it's gay. It's a problem, or it's play. It's a heartache either way, but beautiful. And I'm thinking if you were mine, I'd never, never, never let you go. and that would be but beautiful. That would be so beautiful. That would be but beautiful. I know. I know. Beautiful, beautiful. But beautiful.